Good morning. So glad to see all of you this morning. Thank you for being here again. Hope your weekend has been blessed and you've been able to enjoy the weather and the family and food and all those other things that I'm sure all of us did. We're in Isaiah chapter 6 this morning. I'd like to try to cover 6 and 7 and 8 if we can. This morning. So if you want to be turning over there, Isaiah chapter 6. When we begin this morning in chapter 6, Isaiah says that in the year King Uzziah died, he saw this vision of the Lord sitting on the throne. And I wanted to just touch on this before we go on. Remember that when we talked about at the beginning of Isaiah, I emphasize, well, first of all, at the beginning of Isaiah in chapter 1, he lists the kings, at least those first four. He doesn't mention Manasseh, but some people think he was still around in the time of Manasseh. But he mentions at least these first four kings to kind of set the time in which Isaiah worked, lived and worked. But we also mentioned that even though Isaiah in the book, there's a lot of history in there woven in, that it's not like a historical narrative or everything doesn't happen chronologically. So sometimes it's a little hard to know exactly when he's talking about. And this, I think, is true of chapter 6. It tells us when he had this vision or when he was talking about it, but we don't know exactly how this fits within with the chapters that went before and the chapters that go after. And I don't know that it really matters, but I wanted to mention this because I think Isaiah talks about this because there was something important that happened to him. Some people think this was the call, his first call to prophesy. I'm kind of doubtful about that because he says this is the year that King Uzziah died. And so it would seem like he had been around for a while before chapter 6, before this occurs. But let's read the first 5 verses, if we could, and try to get kind of the vision that Isaiah sees first. And then think about why he might have written about this, about the circumstances in which he might have written this. Can we read the first 5 verses? Who has that? Glenn, can you read it?
In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim, each had 6 wings, with 2 he covered his face, and with 2 he covered his feet, and with 2 he flew. And one called to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts, the whole earth is full of his glory." The foundations of the threshold shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke. And I said, "Woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts."
Okay, thank you. So why do you think, first of all, Isaiah is presenting this picture and he says, "I remember it was the year that King Uzziah died." What might be significant about that? I know we don't have details given here, but from what you know about Uzziah and what you know about Isaiah, why would he have possibly written about it in this way? Okay, he did do that, and that's what we remember Uzziah for. But what else does the Bible say about Uzziah? He paid a high price for that mistake that he made. And in the story we read about Uzziah, he turns out to be a leper for the last so many years of his life. I don't know exactly how long that was, but for a few years. But what does the Bible say about him overall? He was a good man. He made a mistake, but he was a good man. And you know, you notice when we read through the Kings, how many of the good kings they talked about, and yet they say, you know, they weren't perfect. They made a lot of mistakes. They had bad judgment sometimes. They had to kind of turn. And Uzziah was one of those. But Uzziah was a special one in Isaiah's life, I think, because Isaiah was on the throne for how long? Does anybody remember? 52 years. 52 years he reigns on the throne. Isaiah knew no other king in Israel except Uzziah. And here was Uzziah who was a good man, and I think the Bible tells a lot about good things that he did and about his listening to the prophets of God. And I can't help but think that Isaiah, in the year that Uzziah died, Isaiah thought, we're in big trouble. Even though he had made a mistake and he had to pay a price for that, he was a good leader. Think about these kings. He was a good man. What about Jotham? Do you remember anything about Jotham? We don't have a lot about it. But actually, he was a good king too. He didn't reign very long. Some people think during the years that his father was a leper, maybe he was a co-regent or whatever you want to call it. You remember Hezekiah? You remember Hezekiah? And what about him? He was a great king. So Uzziah, Jotham, Hezekiah were good kings. And here, Hezekiah's father and Jotham's son, what about him? He was a rascal that really got Judah in big trouble. He got them in big trouble because of his cowardice and his lack of faith in God and even moving toward idolatry. And I want you to think about this because chapter 7 and 8, actually chapter 7 all the way through 12, deal with the days of Ahaz. They're set in the days of Ahaz and what all Ahaz was doing and what God and what God wants Isaiah to try to do about it. Think about this. Even though Jotham reigned so many years, I can't remember, 12 or 15 years, something like that, a lot of these years were in the days of Uzziah, and they overlap with Uzziah. And then some people think he didn't have such a great record, and his son overlapped with him some. So it could be, and I'm not suggesting it has to be this way, but it could be that there was a short window there where Ahaz is in power, and the kingdom is going to, Judah is going to go downhill. The northern kingdom is crashing because of Assyria, and the southern kingdom is being threatened. And this is coming. And so Isaiah says, the year Uzziah died, there was a lot of stuff going on, and it wasn't a good thing. It wasn't a good situation in Israel when Uzziah died. But then what does Isaiah see in that year? In our text we just read, what does he see? He sees the Lord sitting on His throne. He sees a vision of God on the throne, and a vision that's really aimed at calling Him to go. And I'm not saying He had never prophesied before, because I think He had. But a time of trial and testing was coming for Judah, and I think he's being prepared for that. In the first five chapters, what did we read about Judah and the situation they were in? What was it like? Corruption, idolatry. They turned their back on God. They worshipped with empty worship. Their lives were corrupt and neglectful and evil. And they were going through the motions of worship. And remember in the first chapter, the Lord says through Isaiah, you know, they've forgotten who feeds them. They've forgotten who cares for them. They turn their backs on the one hope that they have. It was not a good situation. Even with the good kings they had, sometimes the people were still, most of the people were still unfaithful to God. And they weren't living as they should have. And I can't help but think God is getting Isaiah ready for what he's got to go do because of what's about to happen. And we're going to see when we get in chapter 7, very interesting exchange between God and Isaiah and Ahaz and Isaiah's children are kind of brought into the picture. So let's kind of try to keep that perspective, at least from chronologically, what's happening here. Okay, so what does Isaiah see? The Lord sitting on the throne, and what's the impression? I know these are hard things. They're hard things to understand, you know, to envision or imagine. But it's here. It was here to tell Isaiah something. Okay. Okay, great. Here's a picture that's designed to impress on Isaiah by the vision of the one sitting on the throne, the seraphim that are floating around, what they're saying, what they're doing, something calculated to create in Isaiah a sense of what? Yeah. The picture of God in control. Someone suggested, and I think this is really a good thought. Isaiah says, the year that King Uzziah died, I was upset, but then I saw who the real king was. Then I saw a reminder to me about who the real king is. And it oriented my thinking differently, and it turned me toward what he wants done, and not worrying so much about who might be on the physical throne. I mean, I realize we're kind of interpolating there, but just try to envision what is being impressed on Isaiah.
I think we did well to learn something from that in the church, wouldn't we?
Absolutely, absolutely. What are these seraphim saying? Holy, holy, holy. The Lord of hosts, the whole earth is full of His glory. This vision is designed to impress on Isaiah something that maybe he, I don't know if he had forgotten, or maybe he was discouraged about it, or maybe he was, you know, he needed bolstering in this because of what he's about to go through, what he's already going through, what he's about to go through. But he has this impression on him from these, I think, probably angelic beings. We don't really know a lot about the seraphim other than what's written here, but from what's written there, they seem to have a function of praising God, of showing His glory, of humility about themselves, but uplifting God. And so try to picture that vision that Isaiah has, and what's the impression it makes on him. Pardon? Well, it's eventually comforting to him, but at first, what does it do? Yeah. First, he says, I'm undone, or I'm lost, some of your versions say. Terry? Yeah. And go back to what Davey said just a minute ago. It seems far removed from us. It's centuries away. It's millennia away. But there's something there for us. You know, one of our regular visitors last Sunday said something to me as we were leaving. And I've been thinking about it, and I thought about it again when I was reading this chapter. She said, you know what I like about coming here? And I said, what is that? And she said, because most of the time it's not about y'all, it's about God. It's about focus on God. And I'm not saying we perfect in that. We have a lot more to do in that regard. But I really appreciated her insight about it. And this is what Isaiah is learning. This is what Isaiah is learning. Don't fret, Isaiah, about the shape your people are in. Don't fret about who's on the throne. Don't fret about what armies are amassing. Don't fret about Assyria. Don't fret about any of these. He's going to tell Isaiah in the next chapter or two, Isaiah, everybody around is afraid. Stand up and don't be afraid. Stand up and realize, don't fear their fear, he says. Don't be moved by that kind of thing. And I think this vision is aimed at making him see that. And as we said, his first impression is, woe is me. I'm unclean. I wonder if he's not sensing, you know, the sins of his people, but he's maybe also sensing, well, I've really failed too. And isn't that a wonderful thing to think about? To think about Isaiah's attitude, he says, maybe I wasn't thinking about the right things. Maybe I was... I don't know what he might have had in mind, but he says, I'm unclean. I'm unworthy. I'm a sinful man. And so he sees God's glory. He feels his own sinfulness, his own inadequacy. And what happens next? We didn't read it yet, but what happens next? Okay. One of these seraphs come, touch a coal to his mouth, signifying his cleansing, signifying his, okay, I can't help but think when I read this, look at the end of verse 7, lo, this has touched your lips, and your iniquity is taken away, and your sins are forgiven. Now get up and get to work. Now get up and act like it. Get up and be my prophet, my spokesman. You know, sometimes we have to feel our guilt before we can really feel the cleansing. We can't truly be cleansed until we have a sense of the dirtiness of the need. You know, and here Isaiah. And I believe Isaiah was a good man. He was a great man. But just like when we were talking about Job was a great man, but he needed something, didn't he? He needed, there was more that he needed. There were higher levels he could rise to. And I think this is exactly what's happening to Isaiah. He's a good man who's faithfully serving God, but he could do better. He could be lifted up. He could be turned toward, you know, have his outlook adjusted. We could say it that way. And so Isaiah feels his inadequacy. He confesses his sins, his shortcomings, his weakness, his iniquity to God. God sends this, in this vision at least, this seraph to touch him and say, okay, I've cleansed you. Get up and go. We spent too much time on this, but I want y'all to think back, those of you who were here, to a sermon that Mike Briscoe preached one Sunday evening about 3 or 4 years ago from this passage. I don't know, maybe I can't remember exactly when it was, but a few years ago from this passage. And it was a moving sermon. Many of you cried that night, that evening, because of what he said. And it was very simple. It wasn't elaborate. It was very simple. But it was direct to the idea, I think, that Isaiah was supposed to get from this experience. That we have a holy Father. We have a holy God. He's standing for something. He's upholding all good things. No matter who's on the throne. No matter what army is invading. Anybody have a thought before we go on from this? I don't want to spend a lot more time on chapter 6. If you read the next few verses, you'll see him calling, the Lord giving Isaiah a little bit more instruction. He says, who shall go for us? There's something that needs to be done. Who shall go? And Isaiah says, here am I, send me. And he tells him to go and speak to a people that are going to do what? Yeah. Go and tell this people. You keep hearing. I'm paraphrasing here a little bit. But you keep hearing, but you don't understand. You keep seeing, but you don't perceive. Go and tell this people. Does that seem strange to you that he's telling Isaiah to do this? You know, this is what he did with Jeremiah too. He said, go and tell these people for 40 years. They're not going to listen to you, but I want you to go do it anyway. Have you ever felt like nobody's going to listen? I'll just shut up because nobody's going to listen. I mean, I feel that way sometimes, and I'm sure all of us do. But think about Isaiah, God telling Isaiah, I want you to go and talk to these people and tell them about what's about to happen. And even though they're not going to listen, even though their hearts are going to be hardened, I want you to carry that message. And why is that? What had he already talked about that there's a reason behind it?
So they know why they were going to be punished.
Okay. Two things I want to think about here. Number one, they needed to know, they needed to understand the reason behind what was about to happen. But also, there's another point in Isaiah that we touched on in chapter 1. And although most people were going to reject him, and the nation was going to fall, there was what? There was this righteous remnant. There was this righteous seed. There were these few precious people who would hold on and be faithful and suffer and go, you know, they would go through hard times, but they would listen to Isaiah. They would listen to God's words. They would take courage from it. They would stand up for what's right. They would help in the unfolding of the things that God had in mind for His people during that time, in spite of all the sidetracks that happened, in spite of all the tragedy that went with it, there was this remnant that God praised and He loved and He held on to them. And Isaiah is part of his speaking is to people who won't listen, but a part of his speaking is to people who will eventually learn their lesson, or to people who would try to remain faithful, to people who would. When they looked around and they saw the Babylonians coming, for example, they didn't read the wrong thing into it. They said, this is what Isaiah said. This is what Jeremiah said. And they stayed faithful to God, even if it cost them their lives. They were faithful to God because they said, this is what God told us would happen. And they needed to know that lesson. I think it's another great lesson for us. Sometimes we just need to learn to look at things that way. That in spite of how bad it looks, in spite of how difficult circumstances are in our lives or the lives of people around us or the lives in our country, that we need to look at it and understand God still works His control in the universe. He still works His plan. We need to be faithful to it. We need to understand it. We need to understand that a lot of bad things happen because a lot of people won't do what they ought to do. A lot of bad things happen because God allows it for different reasons, as we talked about during our studies on Job and you know, many of these other studies we've had recently. Can we touch on, before we leave chapter 6, let's touch just quickly. Turn over to John chapter 12. John chapter 12. By the way, in chapter 6, the Lord, it's kind of interesting that God says, who will go for us? Who will go for us? Who will go for us? Think about that a little bit. John 12, closing out Jesus' ministry, he's about to die. This may have even been like the Thursday or Wednesday, or it's in that week right before he goes to his death. Here's what John says, verse 37, though he had done so many signs before them, talking about the Jews, though he had done so many signs before them, yet they believed not on him. I should have said the Jewish leaders, the religious leaders that he had to deal with, that the word of Isaiah, the prophet, might be fulfilled, which he spake, Lord, who's believed our report? That's coming from Isaiah 53, and to whom hath the arm of the Lord be revealed? Look at verse 39. For this cause they could not believe, because Isaiah said again, he's blinded their eyes and hardened their heart, lest they should see with their ears and perceive with their heart and should turn, and I should heal them. Look at verse 41. These things said Isaiah because he saw his glory and he spoke of him. Isn't that interesting? This is Jesus talking in the temple with the Jewish leaders. John is writing, this is what Isaiah said when Isaiah saw his glory and wrote about him. Does that raise a question for you about that vision in chapter 6? In Isaiah 6? Some people think he was seeing Jesus at that time. I'm not insisting that's right. But just think about this idea. John says, Isaiah spoke of him. Isaiah saw his glory and he spoke about him. But people didn't believe him, just like Isaiah said. Look at chapter 7, back in Isaiah, please, chapter 7. It came to pass in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, remember these kings that we talked about just a few minutes ago, that Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up to Jerusalem to war against it, but could not prevail. And it was told the house of David, who's the house of David? Pardon? Judah is the house of David. Ahaz is the house of David, okay? It was told the house of David, saying, Syria is confederate with Ephraim, and his heart trembled in the heart of his people as the trees of the forest tremble in the wind. Don't skip over that. Think about what Isaiah is saying. What happened when Ahaz and the people hear about what's going on? Ahaz hears that the Syrians and the northern kingdom, Israel, are coming against them. What do they do? They tremble. They know they're done for, because Syria, now this is not Assyria, this is Syria. Syria and had made a league. Syria, a powerful nation, had made a league with Israel, the northern kingdom, and they were coming against Ahaz. And they had the idea, we won't read all this, but they had the idea, they'd put their own man on the throne of Judah. They would put an end to the line of David. They would put their own man on the throne of Judah. And then they would be stronger and they could resist the Assyrians, because now the Assyrians are growing in power. They're starting to press in on the northern kingdom and on Syria itself. They're starting to invade, to push the borders of their kingdom into this region. And now Syria and Israel think they're going to get together, take over the throne of Judah, put somebody they like on there. They'll have a stronger army, stronger confederacy, and they'll resist the Assyrians. And Ahaz is seeing all this, and he's afraid. And the people are afraid. So picture that situation. And now look at verse 3. Then Jehovah says to Isaiah, go forth now to meet Ahaz, thou and Sheer-Jashub. I can't pronounce that, but take your son, go meet Ahaz. Tells him where to go meet him. And say to him, verse 4, take heed and be quiet, fear not, neither let thy heart faint because of these two tales of smoking firebrands, for the fierce anger of Rezin in Syria and of the son of Remaliah. Because Syria, Ephraim, and the son of Remaliah have purposed evil against thee, saying, let's go up against Judah and vex it. He goes on to tell about putting someone on the throne. Look at verse 7. Thus saith the Lord, it will not stand, neither will it come to pass. And he goes on to tell that within 65 years, those kingdoms are going to be gone. The northern kingdom is not going to even exist anymore within 65 years. So he says, Ahaz, you be quiet. Don't be afraid. Stand with God. I'm with you. It looks bad because you've got enemies on the north. You've got enemies on the east. They even got enemies on the west because Egypt is also threatening some at this time. It looks bad. Don't worry. Be faithful. I'm with you. Look at verse 9. The end of verse 9. If you will not believe, you'll not be established. What's he saying there? If you don't believe, you won't be established. Come on, I know you know this.
But he wouldn't have to if he didn't believe.
Okay.
And Ahaz didn't believe.
Okay. Yeah. I know you're afraid, Ahaz, but if you don't trust, you're not going to be established. If you don't trust, you're going to pay a price for this. I'm inserting a little bit of a different idea here, but this was the throne of David. This was the line of David. God had promised to uphold them. He had said, He said, even if I have to punish them, I'll uphold them. I'm going to keep someone on David's throne. He's telling Ahaz, if you don't trust, it's not going to be you. If you don't trust, you're going to be gone and someone else will be there. Keep your faith in my promise. No matter how afraid you may be, no matter what you might fear, keep your faith in my promise. Well, what Ahaz did, just in case we run out of time this morning, what Ahaz did, he decided to make a league with Assyria because they're very powerful and he knows they can protect him. So he decides to make a pact with Assyria, pay tribute to them, gets them on his side to protect him from Israel and Syria. And this is what God is telling him, don't do that. Isaiah is saying, don't do that. Don't make that mistake, because if you do, the Assyrians are going to be up to your neck pretty soon. If you make friends with these guys and you put your trust in them, they may help you against Israel and Syria, but they're going to flow over your land like a flood. And you're going to be up to your neck with Assyrians. And so he's trying to get Ahaz to just turn himself around and be faithful and trust in God. This brings, in chapter 7, this brings to a very famous passage, that the New Testament draws from in talking about the virgin birth of Christ. And I don't think we may not have time to get to that this morning, but I want to look at the setting at least, before we go there. Verse 10, chapter 7. Jehovah speaks to Ahaz, or tells Ahaz, ask a sign, ask thee a sign of Jehovah thy God. Ask it either in the depths or in the height above. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, neither will I tempt Jehovah. What's going on there? Yeah. Isaiah says, or God offers, just ask for a sign and I'll show you. I'll reassure your heart. Isn't this amazing how often God does this? When people need strength, they need to be turned around, they could be turned. God offers them, just ask and I'll give you a sign that what I'm about to do is true. But Ahaz says, I will not tempt God. He quotes Deuteronomy, maybe. Thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God, like Jesus did. He says, I will not tempt God. But what's he really doing? Pardon? Yeah, he's saying he doesn't want to tempt God or test God. But that's exactly what he's doing. He's got his mind made up that his solution is really with Assyria. He's decided that he really is going to bet on Assyria and that they'll help him get out of this. And so he really doesn't want to hear from Isaiah about a sign from God. He said, no, I won't tempt God by asking for a sign. I've got a plan. And he goes on and does that. Well, verse 13. Isaiah says, hear now, O house of David, is it a small thing for you to weary men that you'll weary my God also? And then verse 14, therefore the Lord Himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. Butter and honey shall he eat when he knows to refuse the evil and choose the good. The land, he goes on to say, the land whose two kings you abhor will be forsaken. Those people you're afraid of, those people you're all up in the air about, before this child, before the child is old enough to choose good from evil, they're going to be gone. They'll be forsaken. I want to think about this for just a minute. I don't know who this, in this day and time, I don't know who this virgin that would conceive. And it could be, there's a lot of controversy about this. I don't think there's any doubt that in the New Testament they're drawing on this passage. They're drawing on this passage to tell about the virgin birth of Christ. But in that day and time, what did it mean to them? What did it mean to Ahaz? It suggests to me that there was someone who was not married at the time this prophecy was given, or didn't have any children, was not married at the time the prophecy was given. There was someone who would have a son, and his name would be Emmanuel. And just like the names of Isaiah's sons, there was another son, Emmanuel, God with us, who was, before he got old enough to choose right from wrong, those kingdoms were going to be gone. And you just think about this. What was going on here? In these days, Assyria came and overran the northern kingdom. In 722, they're taken into captivity. A few years later, they're depopulated and repopulated. So, in the days of Hezekiah, they're coming and they're trying. In the days of Ahaz and Hezekiah, they're coming and they're trying to take Judah. They've taken the northern kingdom and they're trying to take Judah. But they can't. They can't take Judah. Why? Because, yeah, and some people think maybe Hezekiah was this child. I don't know if that's right or not. But I'm just suggesting to you what he's saying, what he's revealing through Isaiah, is this will not come to pass because God is with you. Because here's a sign. I am with you. I will establish my kingdom. I will maintain the throne of David. If it's not Ahaz, there'll be somebody else. Assyria cannot defeat you because God is with us. A sign from God. In spite of Ahaz's unfaithfulness, he says, I'll give you a sign anyway. Assyria will not defeat you because God is with us. Over in chapter 35, 36, along in there in Isaiah, he tells the story about the Assyrians coming and trying to overthrow Jerusalem in Hezekiah's day. Do you remember what happened? Sennacherib was the Assyrian, I don't know if he was king then or if he was a general, but he's leading the Assyrian armies. And in one night, his army is decimated and he goes back to Assyria where he came from, and he's eventually killed, but killed by his own people. This was because God said, "This is my promise. I'm with you. Here's a sign. Here's a child. God is with you. You stay faithful to Him, and I'll take care of you in spite of the Assyrians." Let me just touch on one thing as we close. A little bit later in chapter 8 and verse 18, Isaiah says this, "I and the children whom God has given me are for signs in Israel." Look at verse 8, chapter 8, verse 18. "Behold, I and the children whom Jehovah hath given me are for signs and wonders in Israel from Jehovah of hosts who dwelleth in Mount Zion." My life, my name, my children, my children's name, they stand for something. They stand for the names of my children, my own name, the name of Emmanuel as well. But they stand for something that God promised to Judah, that God promised to protect them. And Isaiah said, "That's why I'm here." I tried to get Heather and Davy to pick one of these names for the next little one, but they've got something else in mind, I think. Anything before we close this morning? Thank you all for your attention. We'll pick up. Actually, I'm going to be gone for a couple of weeks, so I think Davey is going to do this class next week, and I'll let him pick up from there, and then maybe Minku the following week when he's here. Anything else? Okay, thank you for your attention.